What is up, everybody? Today we're discussing single black women over 40 who are criticized. What? We're going to talk about that and a lot more on Black Hollywood Lives this week.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Live this week.
Oh, Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Where you gonna run to? All on that day, will I run to the rock?
Hey, I'm dancing so much. I forget the intro on the show. I'm feeling good right now. I feel like getting out of my seat. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Black Hollywood Lives this week. I'm your host, Daryl Kristen. Joining me today are two beautiful women on my panel, Courtney Stewart.
What's up, y'all?
And our very special guest, you know this beautiful face, Nikki Michaud in the house.
Hello, hello, everybody.
Thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me. Nina.
I know, she requested it, so I'm glad that she did.
We've never played Nina Simone.
Like, I know. Well, you know what? You're right. I thought it would be too slow initially, but she got the remix.
I got the remix.
Was the jump off. Yeah. That's what we had. So we're going to be talking about your new movie, Low Life, which I'm all about because it's horror. But first, we're going to get into a couple topics that I know you're going to have a couple things to say about, and then we'll go into a nice interview with you at the end of the show.
Sounds good.
All right. Courtney, what you got for us?
Jump it off, guys. So we've been talking about the kids that were in D.C. and all over the country protesting for their rights to basically be alive and not get shot and be safe in public. And so California has jumped up and said, you know what, we're going to stand up and be first in line and come up with some sort of innovative idea in terms of how to deal with police and shooting and guns and the situations that we have with cops killing black men. Let's just be real. Cops killing black men. So state lawmakers in California announced this week that they have introduced a bill. It's the first of its kind. They introduced it on Monday, and basically it is to raise the standard for when officers may use lethal force and open fire on civilians. And according to the current California guidelines, a police can open fire when reasonable right now. But the law that they want to change it to say, they want it to say only when necessary. So basically, the cops are only allowed to shoot if there were no other reasonable alternatives to the use of deadly force to prevent imminent serious injury or death. So that is the goal of the bill. They've presented it, and they have the support of the ACLU. And the two legislators, Kevin McCarty and Shirley Weber, are leaders behind the bill. They wrote it together. And they're hoping, you know, that it'll get pushed through the assembly, and we'll have some new standards for what police are allowed to do in the state of California in terms of their interactions with civilians. But a lot of, obviously, police are pushing back.
Sure.
And those that are pushing back are saying basically that the proposal is irresponsible and unworkable. Real, like, dark. Okay. But they say basically that those sort of protections are already in place, and that cops are told to use deadly force only when necessary already. And they are taught to try to defuse dangerous situations at first whenever possible. And some are concerned that tinkering with the legal protections for police, because if this new standard gets in place, then obviously if there were other options, it could increase the punishment / you know, more police might get in trouble for having open fire on civilians.
Right.
And they're concerned that if we tinker with those legal protections for police, it could make it more difficult to hire officers and be dangerous, because they're going to be more likely to hesitate when confronting an armed suspect.
You know, both sides do have a valid point. I mean, but on the flip side, the first thing I thought when you read it was like, well, what is it, only when necessary? That's what they're changing the wording to?
Yeah, they want to change the wording. Let me make sure I do it exact. To police may open fire, quote, only when necessary, rather than when reasonable, which is what's currently on the books.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's still going to come down to the same thing, you know, them defining it as this was necessary. I mean, if you look at the Stephen Clark case, there's going to be the same, they're going to explain it the same way.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure.
I'm with you on that. To me, the language is still too general. It's not that much difference from what you already have stated. I mean, I hate to say it, but I think it has to be a little bit more defined on what that really means. It has to be dissected a little bit
more. But don't you think this change needs to come from the police departments? Because something that's imposed upon them is not necessarily going to change the culture from within or have better training, or the way that they resolve these issues. Mm-hmm. Because if it comes the legislature, we legislate, this is what you're going to do. I mean, it still has to work on the rank and file.
Yeah. It does.
I think, because for me, when I read it, like, okay, first I want to say I applaud the assemblyman
absolutely.
For doing
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
So let me say that.
That's a huge step.
We're having a dialogue
that.
About
it.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
But it's interesting because once you hear the pushback from the other police, the police officers and the sheriffs and things, they have a point. Like, they're already taught to de-escalate and all of that. And they're obviously fully capable of doing it in other situations. So it's obviously not, to me, that communicates logically that it's not the wording of what the problem is of when they should be allowed to shoot or not to shoot.
Right.
They don't have any issues figuring that out when it's a white man or a white child or whatever. So
not
to
that
me,
white people don't get shot.
Not that
police.
They don't get
just
shot,
saying.
But right. they don't seem to have as much of a problem.
Right.
I should
no,
say.
No. Yeah.
But so that being said, just changing the language seems like you're attacking the problem that isn't the problem, really. The problem is actually why that perception is different, and how do we shift that perception so that they know to go into the mode of de-escalation as opposed to going right to shooting when right. they encounter other people. And I think that's psychological. I think it has nothing to do with what the law says.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing is with the legislation enforcing it, I feel like that might scare the cops a little bit more into mm-hmm. to maintaining what this says and really doing exactly what it says versus it just being internal. I feel like maybe with the legislation might.
But see, that worries me. Scared cops make me uncomfortable.
Yeah, well, I think that's part of the problem.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
We have police officers who are in fear of their lives.
Right.
Because I look at some of the videos and it does, like, for instance, I think of a couple of the shootings and I hear this cop pulling trigger and the fear in their voice, and it's like, you know, with an unarmed person or a person they think is armed, and it just kind of seems to get out of control, except for some situations.
Right.
But you know what this reminds me of is there was an article about Chicago
mm-hmm.
and how the police have some in certain areas stopped policing.
Yes,
stopped being preventative.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we know that how the murders are going there, and that's really my concern is
yeah.
how do we work in partnership? You know, increase the value of Black lives.
Yeah.
And still work with the men and women in the police department so that we can have less of this happening.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess that I love what the California Assembly has done because we can start talking about it. But I still think we have to, I mean, I don't know, did they work with the police departments on this? Because
yeah, that's what I was
gonna. It doesn't appear that
I didn't see anything
based on anything that.
That
I've read.
Yeah, but then also my thing is like, so it starts in California, so what are they going to like implement it here and hopes that it goes well and then start to implement it into other cities and states? How's that work? I mean, I'm happy that it's in California. I mean, it needs to be here,
right.
But there are a lot of states that need to.
Yeah.
Have this implemented very
yeah.
quickly.
And maybe even though the wording isn't that different from what the police already say,
right.
but maybe just by stating it and putting
yeah,
it out there, it can make a person, it can change, say, one life.
Maybe.
I hope so.
You never know.
What happened to our cameras on the cops?
Don't
they already have that?
But they turning them off. They just, isn't the thing with the Stephon case, or was it something else before that it was on, but then they turned it off at some point during it.
Yeah.
It was I don't know if it was that case
there's
for
so
sure,
many
but
cases.
There's been
so
exactly
sad.
It constantly comes, but
and
I would like to see like a real initiative, and I don't know, maybe they are and I just am not aware of it, of them going into neighborhoods and somehow, I don't know, because it's hard to like rebuild the bonds with the communities that
yeah,
have been harmed
this
by this thing, but
well,
I would like to see those young men and women
there is
on
such
the police force.
A systemic racist problem in our criminal justice system, and
yeah.
I think that these deaths are sort of the you know what pops up
yeah.
from it, and the thing is, how do we undo
right
how
we're
do we
so
undo
far in. Yeah.
how do you
yeah.
undo a system that was never meant really to protect the people that are being harmed
that's
right
true
now?
So
the only way that I know is to recreate altogether. So I think we got to do some real overhaul in what we think police departments are supposed to be in our neighborhoods and communities, and it ain't gonna be easy and it ain't gonna be cheap.
No.
Well, but I like that they're talking about it.
Yes.
That's the first step.
I mean,
talk
because at least
it,
we're not ignoring it.
Although it is very interesting the way now the media is depicting Stephon. Have you noticed,
yeah.
like now all of these negative things are coming out about him, and I'm always like the conspiracy theory. I'm like, is are these things true, or are these things due to deflect from the bigger problem?
We're humans; we protect ourselves, and they're protecting themselves. Like, he could have been dangerous. See, look at all the other things he's done in life, right. And it's just sad. He had two babies. Heart goes out to his family, and his brother has actually been very vocal about everything. Yeah, and he's gone to the town hall meetings, and he had a really interesting interaction on CNN with Don Lemon. Like, he's out there speaking. So all we can do is keep talking. Hopefully,
that's all we can do. I mean, because I still can't understand why vandalism. I'm sorry. Just leave it right there. Gun is blazing for vandalism. Okay. Yeah. I mean, really? Right. I mean, okay.
Exactly. Yeah, we got to set our priorities a little
He's
bit
breaking
better.
Into cars.
Right.
Go get him.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, right. See, to me, that'd be like, let's hit up Dunkin' Donuts first.
Yes. We saw him.
All right,
bro.
Like, okay.
We got the description. We'll be there, buddy.
Yeah. Right. We'll see you.
We'll come for you. We don't have to kill you, though.
Right.
But, okay. All right. So, good luck, Assembly. People, keep working hard on
keep
that.
Working.
Good for you. Good steps. Thank you. Good steps.
All right. Something we don't appreciate is Media Takeout that put a nice little post up on their website this week, and they were kind of shading our former princess of, what was it, hip-hop?
R&B and hip-hop.
R&B, hip-hop,
hip-hop. Miss Ashanti, guys. So they put a post up on their website, and on the post, the headline read, quote, R&B singer Ashanti, almost 40, still no man, and no kids. Damn. What's wrong with her? Mind you, I emphasized some of them words because they had capital letters
that's
on some of them.
That's how they said it, too. That's how they said it. You know, they were thinking that when they put it on there. What's wrong with her?
What's wrong with her?
They definitely said it that way.
They definitely said it that way, and it sparked a lot of debate in Black Twitter land and all over the website, basically kind of going back and forth. Is why are they coming for Black women like this? And then some people are like, well, she is 40. She ain't had no kids. Blah, blah,
so
blah, blah,
if
blah,
you
blah,
don't
blah.
Have kids and you're not a real woman, or for God's sake, you don't have a man, what's wrong with you? No one comes up to a man who's 40, 50, he's single, no kids. No one says, oh, that poor man.
No,
what's he doing with that without
or
kids?
Wrong with him?
No, what's wrong with him? Like,
what,
you got a
usually what men get is more like, when you gonna settle down? Or when you know, but it's not even no pressure. It's like, you got plenty of time.
They mostly give him high fives, like,
you're getting it.
Stay single forever. That's what I get. Stay single forever.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a sexist statement, first of all. It's just straight up sexist.
It's harsh, man.
Okay, but see, let me be the devil's advocate on this.
I'm gonna write down what I
think
you're gonna say.
No, I'm gonna go with the facts.
I know what you're gonna say.
I'm gonna start with the facts. There is a biological clock that is a difference between a man and a woman, so there is going to be more pressure probably on a woman because of kids if she wants to have them.
If she wants to have them. I mean, the whole point is what's wrong with her.
Wait, Nikki turned and put that leg up, too. I was like, hold on, I'm nervous. Yeah,
I can have a conversation.
Talk to him, we don't talk about this before. I know what you're going to say.
The whole idea is, I started with the facts. Those are facts.
If she wanted a child.
Exactly.
If she wants, I mean, the point is, let's just stick to what the post said.
Okay.
You know, what's wrong with her? She hasn't got a kid and no man, as if without kids and a man,
she's
nothing.
True. Okay.
Exactly. I mean, and really, it's a sickness that has to stop, because you have women who are thinking, oh, what's wrong with me? I haven't had kids and they're somehow less than.
Yeah.
You know, it's absurd.
And
it's just
getting in their 30s depressed, even though they've done miraculous things with their education and their careers.
Or they feel
like
they have to choose.
Why wasn't I chosen?
You feel like you have to choose, so you're busting your butt at your job or whatever. I have told people that I know, like, hey, you know, if you're going to have kids, just expect it's going to create a change. Like, there's a whole slowdown.
Yeah.
When I got pregnant, it was like, stop. Everything just stopped. I mean, especially as an actress. And it's really unfair. And it's a kind of thing that women shouldn't have to be burdened with. A man's not thinking about this. He's not climbing the corporate ladder thinking, oh, got to slow down and have kids. But a woman is thinking that.
Yeah,
and that's why a woman's not going to press, put the foot all the way down on the gas to get the CEO, because she might be thinking, well, you know, I might want to take some time off for the kids, because there's no reality. There's not that much of reality where she can have both. Women do and can, but it all comes
at a price.
Absolutely. And it's unfair, because it's takes two
to make it.
I mean, that's true.
And it's not, and having a child is not your identity. Having a man, It's not your identity.
That's definitely
and why
true.
Wouldn't we be more? You're intelligent brother. Like you were around hardworking women, and you know
come
what
from
have
a
you.
Family.
And you're sort
Absolutely.
Of evolved, sort of man up in here.
We mean sort of.
So
I'm
gonna say like, what happened?
But
he seems really evolved.
I'm like,
wouldn't
I mean,
that
can I get
make
low credit?
You? You get a little, but wouldn't that make you that much more empathetic and stop? I get tired of people falling back on the biological clock thing. Okay, because the biological clock.
Yeah, but that's
thing,
the truth.
But it's not the truth. It's an assumption. Sort it is an of. Assumption. That every woman has the same biological clock and that she's going to need to have a child. Just like she said, everybody doesn't want a kid.
No, every I'm not saying that. I'm saying, but if you do want a kid, and you know, at a certain age, you do have to worry about those things. That's
or
all I'm
you
saying.
You have to think about them, but you do not have to
a man
be
doesn't have to.
I can't
be faulted for that. I didn't get the
those
body parts to produce a
no,
child.
A woman does have to, you know, you make certain choices. I mean, the reason why I have two kids today is because I just made a choice that I was going to have kids, and I had them young-ish, not in my 40s because of that same issue. I mean, the doctors are horrible. You go to the doctor, and you get, your age starts getting up. They're like,
When I turned 30, she was like, so you're in a relationship?
I'm like, what are you going to do? Yeah. What are you going to do? It's just so much pressure. Like,
Yeah, my sister's 33. She just had her first kid, and she ended at 31, 32, mm-hmm. the doctors start telling her and her husband, like, hey, you know, you're going to be a... What was it, the senior age?
Yeah,
when
you're
she's
a senior
like
after
32.
You know,
and I'm like, wow, really?
But I think, geriatric pregnancy.
Let's see.
Yeah, geriatric pregnancy. Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. I thought he the senior age. I thought senior as in, what? Explain.
I meant geriatric.
They call
actually.
It
they call
a geriatric
it the senior,
pregnancy.
They call it a geriatric.
They call it a geriatric,
they call it geriatric pregnancy.
I've
so
heard
my sister
that.
Joked
I think it's
about
after 30,
it said it was senior, after 33.
Geriatric pregnancy.
Yeah, they told her she should have her kid before 35. My sister's 33.
Geriatric pregnancy. Wow.
They said complications start. With after that.
They're just all doom and gloom.
Yeah, I was like, wow. I'm like, that's young. I mean, I know women who are mid-40s who have
I know women
that's
who,
the other
who
thing too.
Women who are mid-40s.
Look at Janet Jackson.
You
I know that's different because it's Janet Jackson.
But they had, and I read something very recently, and I don't know how fully accurate it is because I haven't seen all the details about it, but the research in terms of women and their ability to procreate and all of that. In terms of the research that gave us this, once you turn 30, you really got to start worrying about it. And after 35, it's like out. It's really dated information. And it
really?
Was a very, the study that they were all sort of using that went crazy, I think uh-huh. in the 80s, uh-huh. was based in a very small like segment of the population.
Yeah.
It was not a well done study at all. And it hasn't been updated in however 40 years.
It's another plot.
So it could just be that like we're constantly sitting, and that's not to say, look, I'm not crazy. I recognize that women, you lose your, start to lose eggs or whatever,
yeah.
having viable
there's
eggs.
There's more complications like, in the development of the fetus.
Yeah. But there was an article that was a companion with that also said that clearly the rates weren't really dropping off from what that particular researcher looked at until 40.
Right.
So they had women freaking out by the time they turned 30 and thinking they have to get this done, and it's
but
just
you know,
not necessarily the case.
What's really sad to me about the article is just the shaming of black
of
women. That's the part that's really sad. I mean, here she is, a successful woman doing her thing. And to try to shame her like that publicly.
Yeah, I mean well, to play on the other side of the devil's advocate, on the side of not agreeing with this article, is I was surprised when I did see it because of the fact that a lot of women now have developed more into their career life.
Absolutely.
And now most women, or I would say not most, I don't have a statistic, but I would say a lot more women are, you know, career or doing like being the VPs and executives of companies in their late 30s, early 40s, and putting childbearing off until early to mid 40s, I would think, at this stage. Because, I mean, at least 35 plus.
Isn't that kind of a West Coast thing?
I think it's a coast thing. Not like the middle.
Yeah,
of
I mean, I'm from Ohio, so I'm sure the majority of probably statistically is still as
younger women having kids.
If I probably have to guess,
but
not
even
in the bigger
educated
cities.
People in general are having children much later.
Yeah,
true.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So that's a norm, and marriage rates have fallen.
That's
in
true.
Black families as well as white everything
across
like across the board because marriage is no longer a necessity for you know. Property ownership,
right.
like,
financial stability,
right. like those types of things. So it's just, I don't know. I'm like, give a girl a break. Like, you don't know her story for real. Like, you don't
shame
know what
on
she's
you
been
for shaming
through,
her,
like,
right.
and who I she's mean, had to deal with or how she came out of it. And to be like, oh, girl, what's wrong with you? Like, that's
maybe she tried to get him pregnant.
Who knows? She might have
well, they
lost
have no
the baby.
Idea.
Lost
the
baby.
They have no
yeah,
idea.
No,
she could have, like, lost several. I mean, that
yeah.
actually.
Exactly. That happens.
It could be that.
That could
yeah.
be
that. And that.
Or maybe after that relationship with Nelly, she's like, I don't want no damn kids.
You know?
Or another man. It's hot in here. Thank you for very much.
You know, give her a break, guys. Give her a break. Stop being so harsh.
Don't be so harsh.
Before we move on to our next topic, we're talking about women and women's issues and things we like to talk about. There is a podcast that you guys should also check out that, you know, kind of is like girls time, and you get to chat and learn a lot about health, beauty, body, everything you can imagine.
I like that.
And it's The Conversations with Maria Menounos podcast edition. It's hosted by our AfterBuzz TV founder, and Maria Menounos, because it's Maria Menounos Conversations, and it drops every Friday on iTunes, guys. Conversations with Maria Menounos features celebrity and influencer interviews, along with secrets and tips on how to be better in all aspects of your life, from health and wellness to career, relationships, finances. She talks about it all. Just go to iTunes and subscribe to Conversations with Maria Menounos, because it's free. And information is power, and you will learn a lot of stuff.
And it's
on
a fun
Conversations
show
with Maria.
It sounds good.
It's a great show. He shows up on it sometimes.
I do show up on it sometimes. To get that black male perspective.
Because it's always
needed. We need black male perspective
always
all
needed.
The time.
You know,
always.
You always need our perspective,
we
right?
Love it.
Always,
right.
Always.
Exactly. All right, we're going to move on to our EUR Web Story Spotlight of the Week.
EUR Web Story Spotlight of the Week.
All right. Speaking of black, Black-ish, the show. I'm sure you love the show.
Yes.
We've
yes.
seen it's been come and a grown-ish. Huge success.
And grown-ish.
Yes. ABC, a hit show for them. Obviously starring Anthony Anderson and Tracy Ellis Ross.
Yay.
Who's doing really well. Jennifer Lewis, who we love. Go, Jennifer. Well, this has gotten in the news this week. Kenya Barris, who is the creator of Black-ish, he is leaving the show. The rumor is out there that because he's having a creative dispute with ABC about some episodes. And I know that I heard a rumor even about there was a couple episodes that didn't air this year.
Yeah, there was definitely one that didn't air about, it was based on the NFL
kneeling
controversy.
Yeah.
And it was supposed to, it was shot in like November.
And yeah.
then it didn't,
they didn't
they
air it.
Decided
yeah.
not to air it. They aired a rerun.
I don't know if that has anything to do with this, but I would probably guess and say that I'm sure it does.
That was the
So he is apparently being kind of solicited by Netflix to possibly go over there, which seems to have some great programs.
Where Shonda ended up, guys.
That's where Shonda ended up. What do you guys think about him leaving Black-ish, and do you think that the show will suffer by him leaving? Because we also had, you know, look at like Marbaka Kill, who left being Mary Jane,
and
the show suffered. So do you think it will suffer in this regard as well?
Well, it's kind of tricky.
It's tricky, yeah.
I mean, because you have a staff.
Yeah.
And the show's been on how many years?
It's four or five.
A lot of years, a solid cast. I mean, you hate to think that, you know, I mean, although I'm sure he's had a tremendous influence, I'd hate to see it all just not be as great. I mean, I think it's a great show.
Yeah.
And I would love it to still be a great show if he chooses to go elsewhere, but I didn't know. So if he chooses to go elsewhere, they're going to keep the show, though.
They're keeping the show. I'm sure they'll just bring in
another
showrunner.
Or creative.
It's kind of hard
I mean, you know, it's
very specific in terms of how it deals with things.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's a great comedy, but it's not just like, oh, this is a great comedy. We can bring in another comedy showrunner. Because I'm sure if they're having creative differences, he's probably been pushing for a lot of things to happen.
Right.
He'll get some. He doesn't get them all.
I mean,
and the fact that he's pushing
show
is probably
called
why.
Black-ish.
Exactly.
I mean, they should have known where he was coming from.
Exactly. But that's what worries me, is that.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's also since he created it, you know.
Also you have to since he's leaving over these creative differences, if let's just say it is around the NFL, does the new person come in and feel shackled?
Exactly.
You know, that
which
they have
they
to
might
sort
not
of toe the party line
the box, exactly.
I mean, so
yeah,
which
I mean,
it's concerning.
Yeah, it is concerning. I mean, but the thing is the show's running. They're not going to take the show off. I mean,
definitely say as long as it's getting written.
I'm just interested to see how much of the format of the show will change. Like, we'll be able to tell. You know what I mean?
You know what it makes me think about? 2 and a Half Men.
Yeah.
When Charlie Sheen left, they tried so hard.
They did. Mm-hmm. But it did last a while with Ashton Kutcher. It was never the same.
Was it the same?
And I love Ashton.
It'll last.
But
I mean,
it was
we
never
love
the same.
Charlie
Sheen was 2 and a Half Men with
so sometimes you never know what the magic ingredient is.
You're
right.
Until
it's gone.
But it makes me curious about what's happening at ABC, because
there is a shakeup.
There was a quote that Shonda made. Oh, gosh, I wish I remember exactly what it was. But people were kind of going in on Twitter like, is she shading ABC? Like, she kind of alluded to some issues behind the scenes with execs, like, what have you. And it's kind of interesting that now the same sort of vibe is coming from Kenya. So I'm curious what's happening over at ABC.
Right, I would also be curious to know, which we'll probably never find out, but the executives that they are having creative differences with, are they white execs or black execs?
Oh, and there was a debate online today about, because there's a black woman.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because there's a debate about Roseanne, because Roseanne this week, I haven't seen the episode
yet. I haven't seen
yet,
this week's episode.
But I guess they took digs at Black-ish and Fresh Off the Boat on the episode. So some people are really upset, and they're kind of talking about how why it wasn't necessary and whatever. But that being said, people were arguing, like, but a black woman greenlit and everything about Roseanne.
What do you want them to do? Plug a show on another network?
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, isn't Roseanne supposed to be, like, a Trump supporter?
She is. So, of course, she is in life and on the show.
So it makes sense that those are the shows she'd pick at and, pick at our shows. Make them go tune in.
Make them go look at
it. I mean, I don't know. I see.
Yeah, I see.
I mean,
both
it's smart, it's smart cross marketing.
And Wanda Sykes is the head writer or EP or something on Roseanne. So,
I didn't know that.
Oh, really? That's.
I didn't know that.
But then people were coming for Wanda Sykes saying she ain't never really been for the people. So that's another whole thing that it's
fascinating. But what makes you for the people?
I don't know.
What makes you
for the people?
Do you
have to march every protest to be for the people? That's what I want to know.
If the police pull you over, they know you're for the people.
They know you're black.
You're for the people.
You're for the people.
Don't say that phrase anymore. Right. I don't like that phrase at all.
But I've heard that about other people. And I just want to know, what does that mean? Is it because you're not as... in the public's eye, vocal, you know?
I don't know that, but maybe it's just creatively they feel like she hasn't pushed her blackness as much as some others.
What?
But everybody got to walk their own path. And
Wanda
whatever.
Been wearing an
so
afro before anybody
yeah, like
was going to Wakanda.
She's been wearing an afro
you
for
know,
a minute.
I mean,
yeah, she has. And
I
even on
know.
The show with from
Curb?
Seinfeld.
Curb Your Enthusiasm?
No, what was the Julia Dreyfus, the show she had that Wanda was on. No, the one before that comedy.
Adventures of Old Christine.
Oh, Old Christine.
Wanda.
That's right.
I remember seeing several episodes where you knew she was black. You know, she was.
I don't know. These are the silly things that happen amongst our people. I mean, you don't hear about white people talking about.
Well,
he's not really for white people. I mean, really,
we do get on ourselves.
It's like
way
the
too
silliest
much.
Shaming each other.
We do shame each other. Shame each other more than others do. I mean, it's just the way we are towards each other. We're hard on each other.
Stop,
guys.
You're right.
Stop.
We brainwashed.
No more shaming.
No more shaming.
Shout out to Wanda Sykes. Good job on Roseanne.
So far, I know. Listen,
you got that check.
We're good for
that check.
My mom likes Roseanne.
I mean, you know, Roseanne is.
I was into it. First two.
I was just confused because the season finale, when they ended off before, Dan was dead. Dan died, and now he's alive.
Who was that?
Nobody cares.
But I'm just saying, like, how is it?
Nobody cares.
He went into cryo.
Yes.
They unfroze
him
and he's back.
It was sleep apnea. They just thought
it was
like
it was the healthcare plan that Trump supported.
Yeah,
that
right.
Brought him back.
Exactly, that brought him back. Exactly.
Actually, it was Obamacare. Now they confused. Like, wait, but we love Trump, but Obamacare saved our lives.
Right. Exactly. All right. So
no, that's the American healthcare plan. That's not Obamacare. It's the same thing.
It's the same thing, isn't it? Nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
It's the same thing.
Same plan.
Same plan. All right, well, we got to... this also made the news. This is our last story before we get into interviewing Nikki. But for the first time in history, an American studio is partnering with a Nigerian studio. So Sony Pictures TV will co-develop a project with Ebony Life TV, one of the biggest TV networks in Africa. So they're developing a female series inspired by the 19th century all-female military troop who fought against the French. So this is like an epic historic moment, and it was just announced.
This.
We got to give them claps and kudos as we are talking about promoting our African Americans.
Not to be confused
and
with
Africans.
The movie that Viola and Lupita are doing. It's about the same all female military, but they're doing it from like a mother and daughter perspective.
There'll probably be four more. That's how you do it, Hollywood.
Yeah.
Beat
it. That's true. You're
beat
right
the
about
Hollywood
that.
To death.
They were like,
"Ooh,
the Dora Milaje. That's like a whole thing. We're gonna make so much money off this. Now y'all care."
Mm-hmm. Right. It's like,
well, hey,
that's how
I ain't mad.
Black female 300.
So, I mean,
right? Thank Like,
they haven't given a lot of information about it quite yet. I mean, because I think it's still kind of very much in the development stage. But I'm excited for this project.
I can't wait for some exciting chocolate ball headed women to run around killing all y'all.
Exactly.
But hold on. I thought these are real. This is a real.
It was
historical.
Real. It was real. Yeah.
Because you're referring it to the Black Panther thing.
Well, that was based, but it was based on that.
Gotcha. I was trying to. Did you know Wakanda is not a real place?
Wakanda is not a real place. No, no. But in my soul,
in my spirit.
I believe.
All right, well, congratulations. Well, first of all, congratulations to Sony Pictures for taking
that leap,
you know? Mm-hmm. And this also, you know, with the success of this will open up opportunities for other African countries or African companies to come and play.
That Black Panther has broken another record.
It did.
They're the first film to open in Saudi Arabia in 35 years.
Oh, see, I didn't even hear that.
I didn't know that.
Saudi Arabia has had a ban on cinema for 35 years. They're going to now start showing movies, and the first movie they will show is Black Panther.
Wow. That's awesome.
I mean, how crazy is that?
I mean,
yes.
Crazy is that?
It's setting the
go, Chadwick. Ha ha.
Go, Chadwick.
I love it.
Listen, you guys are doing it big with that.
I love it. Because
they're about to pass Titanic as the.
Are they? Really?
Most money made in whatever.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, for sure.
Titanic was number four.
It was number four.
So now they're about to.
I stopped pass checking Titanic, all the numbers. Yeah. It was all just like.
It's like money,
mind
money.
Now, my question, real quick, before we get to you, Nikki, is that do they get. The actors getting a little bit of the back end money since it's so successful, or do they get to renegotiate as an actor?
I know there's no renegotiating. Okay. Well, I mean,
or you renegotiate for the next film. You're like, listen,
I don't know because Marvel already knows they're going to make a lot of money.
Yeah. True.
So I don't know how much residuals you get to have, and I have no idea.
Okay.
I have no clue.
Okay.
So I'm very curious.
Yeah. To each deal.
Right.
Yeah. So person to person, you know, maybe you had two lines. I don't know.
Right.
I hope Chadwick at least got like a point on the back end.
Something.
Like, I don't know.
All the time.
But I bet you're going to get a point on every movie from here.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And
you will.
And you're going to be cashing in for quite some time.
That's right.
And maybe you'll be working with Chadwick someday soon.
I hope so.
Let's
My Lincoln Heights buddy.
Your Lincoln Heights buddy. That's right. Let's talk about your new movie.
Yes.
Low Life.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I was saying, I am a horror buff, all right? So I am all about that thriller horror type of film.
So
I read a little bit about this. Describe the film to the crowd.
Well, basically, it's an organ harvesting caper that goes wrong.
Ooh,
yes. So I gave my daughter up many, many moons ago when I was an addict. And now she's all grown up, and I'd like to buy her kidney to save my alcoholic husband.
Hmm.
Now, I find out when I try to buy her kidney that I actually put her in this sort of sex trafficking organ harvesting thing, and I try to go get her out. So I team up with a Mexican wrestler, luchador, and an ex-con who just got out of jail, grab my shotgun, and comedy ensues.
Wow.
No, it's different. It's definitely different.
Wild.
I got a lot of visuals in my head. So I'm like, the shotgun.
You gotta go rescue. It's like Taken meets.
Yeah.
They're calling it Breaking Bad meets Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction.
Exciting.
Yes.
So is it one of those things that's going to keep us on the edge of our feet?
Absolutely. You know, when I read the script, I was like, literally, like, oh my God, what's going to happen next? Like, it's such a page turner. And so sitting on the edge of your seat because you're not going to read it. You're going to, because you're never going to know what's going to happen. I mean, it completely catches you off guard. And it's really solid. It's a good story.
Okay, I'm excited.
It's fun. Getting to do like stunts and physical?
No, I just shoot guns.
You just shoot the guns?
I just shoot guns.
And did you prep for that?
Oh, wait, I had some fights.
You got in some fights?
I got some fights. Yeah, I got some fights. Well, I didn't do gun training on this one because I worked on a film with the director before where I shot like a bunch of guns.
Okay.
So I did gun training there. Okay. So I was kind of already ready. So this one I only have a shotgun. The one before I had a 9mm shotgun, an M16.
M16.
Yeah.
Were you inspired by anybody with your character creation? And like, did you look at somebody and say, I kind of want to build this around this?
No, not really. Not for this one, because honestly, the character's so unique.
Yeah.
It's so unique. And I'm just going to be frank with you. Normally, when you get a movie like Low Life and that kind of character, normally they would hire, you know, Frances McDormand or some white woman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Normally, I wouldn't get a character that's so well-rounded like that.
Yeah.
So in terms of in the black world, there was nothing really to reference. So I just created. I just created based on what was on the page.
I love that.
Yeah, and it was fun. And Ryan and I, we've worked together for a while, so I had a lot of freedom.
Yeah.
So, and I felt, and also, not only was he cool, but I had a lot of confidence. Like, oh, I'm gonna try this, I'm gonna try that, you know, because I knew I could if I ever went too far, he would let me know.
Okay.
So it's like a safe space.
I like that. I like when you can play around a little bit.
Like to play. No, I love to play, especially when a movie like this, because it's a bit, you know, it wasn't something we had seen before. I mean, when's the last time you tried to buy your daughter's kidney and then you had to go rescue her?
Yeah, right? I can't. Yeah, I'm trying to think.
I mean, you know, people are like, could you relate? I'm like, yeah, because last week.
Yeah, maybe when I watched Law and Order, something, right, like an old episode. Something.
Right, yeah. Marvel, right. SVU moment.
Right,
right. Exactly.
Now, we obviously had a place. We talked about Black Panther. We saw Get Out have a very successful year. We see Netflix and all these different places that are really starting to, or seemingly investing in African-American content and culture. Do you think that you've been in this industry for a while? Are you really starting to see the change? Do you feel like there are more roles now for African American women that are leading roles that are like you, like this is an action role, like a thriller? Mm-hmm. You know, are you starting to see that really happen, or is it still?
You know, the past couple of months, there have been a lot of projects leading with black women who I know and love that are going to be coming on TV in the fall. So big difference. I mean, it's been amazing. I mean, some amazing actors and Latino actors who've been playing like number three, number four, like kind of in the great supporting cast. You know, you've been seeing their faces, and now they're actually headlining their own shows.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's a huge difference. Certainly, I have seen more opportunities for myself. But it's fresh. So, you know, I'd like to talk about this again next year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like next year. Let's talk about it next year and then the year after that. Because, you know, you have these windows and it opens up and then it closes. And sometimes, remember the last time they talked about it and they're like, oh, there's too many black people. Too many black shows on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then it just kind of goes.
They were completely gone. Oops.
Sorry.
It's okay. That was just the microphone.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Hit the microphone. She got excited.
They take it back.
See, it's all that action from Low Life. You know? Like, just slapping up some folks.
You know, because they let you in and then they like, you know, they start to take it back. So I'm hoping that this can be a part of some real change.
Yeah. This may be a little redundant, but in terms of inclusion, we're always kind of talking about, you know, ethnic profile and that kind of thing. Do you feel it in terms of age and ageism and how that sort of women sort of get counted out much faster in Hollywood and much earlier?
But hasn't
that,
I feel like that's changed.
Do you feel like you see that kind of changing, again, shifting a little?
Well, I mean, the past couple months have been good.
Okay.
But it's only 3 months.
Okay.
I mean, I'm just being real.
Yeah.
It's only 3 months. I mean, I'm seeing there are a lot more women directors that are getting a shot, but we have a long way to go. You have to understand, I've been working in this business over 25 years. I can count the number of female directors that I've worked
with. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, less than five or something, you know?
I didn't even think it was going to be that many.
No, I wasn't. I'm not sure I got to five.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, so we have we're half the population.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and then there are many other positions behind the camera. So we still have some work to do. But again, we're talking about it. Yeah. Some people are getting hired. Some people are doing things about it. So I have high hopes. Mm-hmm. But I think before we break out, you know, the confetti.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's give it another year.
Yeah.
And see how it goes.
Yeah, I think Anthony from the booth has a question for you as well.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I'm actually taking it back to the film itself. I remember reading about this film a while ago, and I read a review on it, and it's been on my radar ever since, so it's like really awesome to have you on the show, by the way.
Thank you.
I just wanted to ask, so this film involves luchadors.
Yes.
It involves corrupt ICE agents. It involves immigration. It involves organ harvesting, prostitution, and very grim violence. So pretty much I want to ask, like, I feel like to you, what is the film trying to say when it touches upon or pertaining to the prominent anti-immigration sentiment that is going around in our country? Because it is very prominent that there is a Mexican culture influence on here as well.
Yes.
And is there also an anti-Trump sentiment as well? Because you can see the character of Teddy being sort of like Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And also has to do with the moralities of these characters where they're pushed to the brink of their own moralities, but at the same time, because of the corrupt nature that in which they live in, they're still able to find hope. So is that like a message of saying possibly that, like, although we do live in this society where we have this man in chief who's so against us at this moment right now in time, there is still hope? Is that, can you touch upon that a bit?
Well, I mean, first of all, we shot this movie in January 2016. Trump had not been elected.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So what we were talking about, I mean, a lot of people didn't know what ICE was. when we were talking about it. But there is sex trafficking. There are black market organ harvesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we were kind of lifting up the corner of the lid on some of these issues. You know, the filmmakers had a love for the luchador culture.
Yeah.
And so they just thought it would be cool. Like, how cool would it be to have a luchador movie? I mean, it's awesome. And he speaks Spanish. You know, so we have, there's a third of the movie is in Spanish. And it's really wanted to highlight these issues, but still present it in a way that's, let's say, accessible. You know, if we never, ever, ever, ever thought Trump was going to be elected. Yeah. You know, they're calling this the first Trump era movie. And it just sort of, we just were talking about these issues because they were already there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and it's not really a mistake that Trump got elected, because these kind of things were going on, this sort of anti-immigration.
Yeah.
Thing, you know, and also people being dismissed. And Low Life is about people who are the main characters, or people who have been dismissed, and they're on their own road for redemption. I guess if I were to say there's a message in the movie, it definitely is about, no matter how far down you go, you can call your way back. Because these characters, I mean, they things could not get worse for these characters, and each one of them find a way to claw their way back. And I think that's there's hope in that.
Yeah, I think people want hope. That's all we got.
Every day, honey.
Yeah. That's all we got.
Yeah, well, because the news is like, yeesh.
I try not to watch it
the
anymore.
The news, you honestly. Walk outside, like, go anywhere you go at this point, you're just like,
you can't watch too much of it. You got to take a break.
You got to take a break. Like, you got to take a break from Stacey Dash, because I was listening to something she was saying the
other
day. Why
were you listening? Sorry.
For some reason, I wanted to just see what she had to say.
It's interesting.
After about 3 minutes, I realized it was the same thing I knew she was going to say, the nonsense. So I had to walk away from the TV. So.
Well, I mean,
you know, but everybody has their role. Stacey has her role, you know.
Hey, she gets paid, right?
She gets paid. Yeah.
There you go.
She gets paid. Now, I know you're also the ambassador for Oxfam.
Yes.
So tell us about that.
I have been working with Oxfam a little while ago now, as one of the sisters on the planet, basically just trying to raise awareness to women's and women's issues, you know, in different communities across the globe. So what we do, like, I specifically went on a trip to Cambodia, where we met with the farmers and different women, and kind of talked to them about their financing and sustainable farming efforts, because the whole point is, women are really, we feel, the corner of society. They're the corner of the households. A lot of women are managing the money. They're raising the children. They're deciding where the education is happening. And if you support the women, if you educate the women and give them something to stand on, you can lift the whole culture.
Yeah.
And so that's by raising the value of women across the globe. I mean, I think it's interesting because, you know, now in the United States, we've got this Me Too movement.
Yeah.
And so many women are speaking out. And we realize there's this level of second-class citizenship as being a woman, where you are, you know, you're behaving a certain way so you can keep your job. Yeah. Or you're letting people do things to you, you know, by choice or not, that are sort of like become this sort of norm. Like, where people say, well, she shouldn't dress like that. Because we've sort of accepted that's, you know, what we do. And even to be shamed that you don't have a child. Because women have to be valued more, you know, as a true equal. Now, we're lucky in this country compared to places like, you know, Zimbabwe, where I worked a little bit in an orphanage there, or what's going on in Cambodia. But, you know, we have a lot going on here that's so much better for us. But our job in these Western countries is to be a voice for these women who don't have access to education, who don't have a right to own property.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if those cultures can't elevate, they can't move up if the women don't move up.
That's true.
Well, just saying. About, just saying.
I feel
I'm
you,
just
Nikki.
Saying.
Look, I feel you.
Y'all take volunteers.
There you go. Now, I feel you. I mean, you know, we've talked about it. It seems like the theme today has been a lot of change. So hopefully all these changes, whether it's the entertainment business, whether it's what you're talking about right now, or even just the shaming of women, you know, hopefully that will all start to change.
Well, change is constant. So, you know, and that's the beautiful thing. I mean, one of the interesting thing about, you know, all of the what we see with the police, mm-hmm. and the women. I mean, the internet's been fascinating in terms of,
yes,
like,
it
is out there.
It's on there. Yeah.
It is out there.
Yeah.
There is a light on it, good, bad, or indifferent.
Yeah.
It is out there.
Yeah.
And we have to deal with it.
Yeah. Well, we also have to deal with find out what your social media is, because
yes.
fans
oh, yes.
need to find
need to
out
yes.
how to
where to find
follow
you.
Me.
Follow you, find out more about Low Life.
Yes,
you know.
I am.
Are you a tweet? Like, do you tweet people?
I
back?
I tweet all the time.
Okay.
I tweet all the time. Instagram, Nikki Michaud. Just follow me on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. That's where
and
I'm
all
at.
Those. Okay, Courtney.
All over the Twitters and Instagrams at Stuart Starlet.
And we're also going to go out with a movie that we're talking about, you know, changes with African Americans and taking on different roles. There's a movie called Dirt that we'll leave you guys with on the way out. It's about a black racer. It stars Da'Ron Horton. It's Warner distributed through Warner Brothers Home Video. So if you guys are bored and want to go, you know, rent a Red DVD box, or maybe go get a Red Box, check out this movie. Here's a little preview for you guys as we go out.
Hoping you can take on.
You want to put a criminal on my team?
You know this ain't go-karts, right, kid?
Kid's had nothing but bad luck.
I got my sister to look after.
You need to trust your team.
I'm gonna handle it.
Oh, you're gonna handle it?
Come on, yes!
So it just came out on DVD about a week or so ago. So go check that out. You guys, I think you'll enjoy it. I saw a little clip of it. So you can find me at Daryl Christ on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And you'll find us next week on This Week. And Nikki, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Check out Low Life.
Yes.
When is it coming out?
Oh, Low Life opens tomorrow, April 6th. It'll be in theaters and on demand.
Go check it out. You got a plan for the weekend? Go see Low Life.
Low Life, baby.
All right, everybody have a great weekend.
Executives Kevin Undergaro, Daryl Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagram at King XO Betty. Thanks for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.